He is immortal. Born in the Highlands of Scotland 400 years ago, he is not alone. There are others like him. Some good, some evil. For centuries, he has battled the forces of darkness, with holy ground his only refuge. He cannot die unless you take his head and with it his power. In the end, there can be only one. He is Duncan MacLeod, the Highlander.
Welcome in to Let's Watch Highlander. This is Let's Watch Highlander Season 3, Episode 3, The Revolutionary. And here to talk with you about it, I am your host, Travis, a.k.a. TV's Travis, and with me, as always, is Audie. And Audie, how are you this week?
Doing all right. It's only Tuesday, and it feels like it's been a heck of a week. No particular reason, just all kinds of stuff going on, and it just feels like it's been a long week already.
Whereas for me, I took yesterday and today off of work, so my week hasn't even started yet.
I saw that.
We had The Revolutionary is it's an episode. There's some stuff to talk about with it. Some things happen in it that actually are pretty important. Kind of spoiler alert, it's not the best episode.
Yeah. And we'll get into that, but I have a particular thing that I would say is why that is, but we'll get there.
Okay. I'm interested to hear if one, what that is, and two, how closely it aligns to at least one of the issues I have with the episode.
yeah, we'll see.
But before we break down the plot of the episode and then talk about all the pieces, I rifled through the box, the shoebox full of Watcher tapes, and I have another one. Nice. So here's
all that. All right.
October 10th, 1994. I've been embedded in Paul Karras's revolutionary group in the Balkans for some time now, and he seems to be getting more and more unstable. It's as if he feeds on the conflict and will let nothing stand in the way of the fight, including peace. I've never seen someone so able to rally his troops. I guess the stories of his time with Spartacus were not as embellished as it would seem. I mean, he convinced those men to attack tanks. Tanks! With nothing more than a few rifles. I suppose it's a good thing he likes to fight for the little guys. Because if he got in his head to take over and stay in power, it could be incredibly dangerous.
So the episode opens with actually a little newsreel, and it's talking about a war happening or some sort of insurgency revolution going on, and it mentions the name of Paul Karras leading this revolution somewhere in, I believe it's the Balkans. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of cut to a group of men, boy, did the set look like the set from The Zone or what? I think it was the exact same set, actually. Also, that one extra that was in the front holding the AK-47, he had no idea how to hold that thing. That looked so weird because he had the stock outside of his arm. I was like, something, no. We need to be better than that. But anyway, they're escorting a hostage. They've got a guy with a hood over his head. They're handcuffed. They're taking him in somewhere. Then we cut to a man. And he's trying to rally some troops, basically, is kind of what it looks like. He's talking to somebody. They bring that hostage in, and he unveils him, and he's, you know, so-and-so's secret police member. And then he just shoots the guy and uses that as a way to rally his troops.
Right.
The biggest thing with this scene that I noticed was the fact that the show is not afraid to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we've sort of touched on that when we talk about, you know, the show showing people falling out of, like, from high heights, and we get to see the dummy kind of hit the ground. Like, I don't know. I don't remember that kind of stuff being allowed on TV. And granted, it's not graphic, but he straight up shoots somebody basically in the head that is unarmed. So kind of surprising that the show would go that dark for something.
Yeah. I mean, it was about as quick of a shot and body falling. Like, they probably were using every inch of what they were allowed to do for that.
That's true. But then we cut to a government building somewhere in Seacover, and we see Mr. Karros now, the guy that we just saw in his army fatigues. Now he's in a suit and tie. He's coming out of a meeting with a congressman of some kind.
Right.
About something to do with lifting an arms embargo. That's all we really know. Or that's all kind of the information that we're given. And then we see Duncan and Charlie, and they're heading to the building, talking about this guy. Charlie's heard of him. He's heard, you know, the name here and there. Duncan, of course, knows him, and he's being cagey about it. And
right.
They go inside. Karros gets the feeling of Duncan being there.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a flashback. So we come out of the flashback, and as Karros is being interviewed and talking about everything, somebody comes up and shoots at them and hits the priest that's with him. Father mm-hmm. Stefan, I believe is his name. So, you know, that causes Duncan to chase the shooter, and which that's an important plot point for later on, that right. Duncan was the one that ran after the shooter. So cut ahead. The priest is in the hospital, and Karros wants to know when he can talk to the press. And the doctor who presided over him is like, no, this man needs, you know, you're not doing that, essentially. She's like, you're not going to be using him. And then Duncan shows up, and they talk. They go back to the loft. There's a lot of weird back and forth going on with where they're located, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But they're, you know, Duncan and Karros are old friends, but there's some tension between them. There's also tension between Charlie and Karros's assistant or friend or helper, Mara.
Mm-hmm.
But their tension's a little different.
Which,
again, will come into play in a little bit. And basically what we find out throughout the episode is that things are going on that Karros was behind the shooting of the priest.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of just wants to keep the conflict going, it seems. And will stop at nothing to free his people, which Duncan kind of tells him towards the end, like, look, you don't have any people. We get a couple more flashbacks. We learn a little bit about Karros, and end of the day, Duncan decides he can't let this keep going on. He's gotta stop Karros, because Karros will stop at nothing to keep these conflicts going.
Right.
And Charlie decides that he wants to join in the rebuild of whatever country, unnamed country this is.
Right.
Because of his love is a little bit strong, his attraction to Mara, and wanting to feel mm-hmm. like he's useful. He likes right. that. We're going to talk about that a little bit more too, but mm-hmm. yeah, end of the day, Duncan's got to fight Karros. They do. And he has to take him out because it's just not yep. safe.
You were never a slave.
So
life was the property of the Roman Empire. I was a gladiator trained to die for the frivolous amusement of Romans.
Must have been a great disappointment to him.
Oh, I was a hell of a disappointment.
So special guests this week. We really have one and a half, and we'll get into the half in a minute. But our main special guest is Miguel Fernandez as Paul Karros.
Mm-hmm.
He's fine. I don't have anything bad to say about him per se, but he's not great either. Now, some of that not his fault. He's in an episode following both Ito and Randall Tex Cobb back to back. Mm-hmm. Two incredible, plus Stephen McHattie. So we've had three great special guests in two episodes. And
right.
he's got to follow that. And he's not, there's nothing against him, but this was exactly what his career was, which was one-off appearances on TV and TV movies and mm-hmm. stuff like that. That's what he did. Looking at his IMDb right. and kind of going back through, it's just what the guy did. He's fine. Mm-hmm. He's not bad. It's just stacking him up against these other special guests that we had to start the season off. You know, he unfortunately draws the short straw.
Right. He was my issue with this episode.
Okay.
After exactly what we've talked about, having great people in the previous two episodes and the previous seasons, where we talk about how they just somehow, with as little as they're given to do, push it that much farther to make that character just that much better.
Mm-hmm.
Not pushing it too far, but doing it just enough to give it, give that character a real sense of gravitas in the episode.
And yeah.
I just did not feel that with him in this one. Like you said, he was good. He was good, but he was not the great that we talk about sometimes with special guests.
Right. And I think were all the special guests of his caliber, he'd be fine. He'd be upper echelon mm-hmm. of that. But when you, especially, like I say, coming off these first two episodes of this season and how good the casting was on these special guests, and then he's there and he's fine, but it's sort of the problem this entire episode has, which is it just sort of feels like a bit of filler. There's nothing mm-hmm. new being brought here. You know, Randall Tex Cobb last week wasn't a new type of evil immortal. But because it's him and his presence on screen, he brings something different. And mm-hmm. I feel like this was a little bit of a retread of the character of Arthur Drake from season 2, Warmonger.
Right.
He's not that much different. The difference is where Arthur Drake was the dictator, the I'm going to oppress everybody and rule type, but from the background.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Paul Karras was trying to be a Spartacus. I mean, that was his
right.
That was his inspiration, was knowing Spartacus when he was young and using that. And it's just not enough of a departure for a character to really stand out, and it also mm-hmm. not be a really just like outstanding performance.
Right. For sure. And the other thing that got me about him is that as soon as I saw him, I was like, without looking at the cast, I was like, is this Michael Ironside? I was like, no, this is Michael Ironside light.
Yeah, he does have a little bit of that look. He does have that kind of wish.com Michael Ironside.
Right. Which is what I look at him, I'm like, I want more gravitas.
And yeah.
He just didn't have it.
And it's unfortunate because I think in the right situation, I think he would have been fine. He's not mm-hmm. bad, but he's not given a lot. The character is right. just this singular driven, you know, I'm going to fight wars at all costs, revolutions at all costs. He doesn't mm-hmm. care. He doesn't even care who he's overthrowing. He's just going to overthrow somebody. He's taking a side in a fight right. and his side is right in his mind. He's going to do whatever he has to, whatever it takes.
Mm-hmm.
Down to, you know, it's the trope of like, he's the one behind the assassination attempt in order to drum up sympathy and create a martyr where there wouldn't be one.
Right.
To create this whole situation of the other guy is horrible and you can't trust him no matter what. Well, mm-hmm. no, you're the bad one. You're the one that can't be trusted because you're doing this stuff behind the scenes.
Right. You know,
even after the opposition shows up to talk peace, he yeah. still doesn't trust him, kind of thing. So it's just, mm-hmm. it was a little too tropey. It was a little too much of that. And it's unfortunate because, again, I think this guy had a fine career playing those characters.
Yeah.
And maybe either in an earlier episode or an episode with a little more intrigue to it and a little something different, he'd have been, mm-hmm. I think, maybe looked at a little bit better.
Right.
It's just, you know, it's not his fault. That it's not as memorable. It's just kind of what happened. And then the reason I said kind of 1.5 special stars is guest stars is we get the introduction of the ER doctor, Dr. Ann Lindsay,
mm-hmm.
who I kind of like that the show introduces the character this way. They did it with Charlie too in season 2, where we got to meet Charlie in just sort of a happenstance of Duncan walks into the dojo and there's Charlie running it. And then he right. becomes more, that's what they're doing with this character, but you don't know that right now
mm-hmm.
necessarily. However, it's a nice introduction to her character because we get to learn enough about her that when she shows up again later, we're like, yeah. Oh yeah, that was the doctor that was like, no press conference, everybody out here.
Right.
You know, she's no it's nonsense. Funny. She takes no guff from anybody.
This is a character I completely forgot about, but as soon as she showed up, I was like, Oh, Dr. Lady.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, she, like, sadly...
I know we're getting more of her, so...
Yeah, sadly, like, her character isn't as memorable. We'll talk about her more as she starts showing up in more episodes.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. But she gets a half a special guest star. Mm-hmm. And then, because I have to mention it, is the guy working the morgue. I don't know who the actor was off the top of my head.
Oh, my gosh.
But was he...
Robert Eisman.
Yeah.
Is the name of the actor.
I know what they were going for. I know what they were trying to do with that. I didn't love it. I didn't really need that character. At least not so much of him, you know?
I'm completely opposite. I absolutely loved him and wanted more. Like, oh my gosh. It gave me very, what was the French guy in Paris?
Maurice.
It gave me very Maurice vibes, but done a little bit more playful and worked. Like, just him talking to the bodies and having such a, like, just fun attitude as someone in the morgue. I don't know. For whatever reason, I loved him.
I mean, I didn't hate him. I just didn't love him. I felt like it felt... That felt like 90s TV forceful to me. But, you know, maybe that's just me watching it now. Maybe I liked it a little bit better. Or maybe it would have been better had that been a character that showed up more often. Like, he had to go to the morgue more. And he talked to this guy. And so...
Oh, yeah.
Then it doesn't...
I would have loved to see more of this guy.
I don't know. And honestly, he could have been played by Rip Taylor. And it would have been as... Probably more subtle, actually. It's hard to say. He was fine. I did like, though, the reason for Duncan to be in the morgue and this character to be there. And that I'm fine with, which is Duncan was the one that chased the guy. So the police wanted him to be there. They didn't have to manufacture something where Duncan just shows up to find out who this is. He's actually sent there by the police. So when the detective or lieutenant or whoever it is shows up afterwards, there isn't some weird, like, oh, Duncan's not supposed to be here. Like, there's a plot relevant reason for him to be in the morgue and see this person.
Sure.
So I didn't mind that so much.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, not bad special guests, but we've had better. Mm-hmm.
And two more little honorable mentions, because we get some actors that come through a couple episodes and just are playing random characters. So you've got John Novak as simply as Mason. He was the reporter dude who always had a
microphone on somebody's microphone. Face. Yeah.
He's from the episode 2. Like, he was the sheriff.
Hmm.
Immortal.
Oh, that was the same guy?
Episode. Yep.
No kidding. I didn't even make that connection at all.
The one time when he's at the house and with Mara and Charlie and just immediately opens the door and puts a mic and he starts talking. It's like, ooh. So still weird ADR voice for him. It's the exact same voice. So, you know, it's his voice, but it was like, okay. And then the girl who was in the flashbacks as Elda, the girl helping out.
Mm-hmm. With
people and stuff. She was in The Darkness. She was like the lover of the first immortal in that episode.
Yes. Okay. That I did notice, because she looked familiar, but I couldn't place exactly which episode it was. But man, I didn't even make the connection with the guy playing Mason at all.
And, yeah. John Novak.
Huh. That's pretty cool. Nice catch.
So we talk about these characters coming back. So we'll probably see quite a few more of these, because, you know, as we were going through the initial episodes, we were talking about them and we're like, and this person's going to show up later as another kind of character, and which happens a lot. Law and Order did that, like, religiously. So we'll see more of that probably here and there. But it was just funny that those two, I was looking up. I was like, what? They seem familiar. Oh, they've got a couple credits. Who are they? Oh, okay.
Very cool. So yeah, special guests. Not the best, but we've definitely had much, much worse.
Right.
I mean, you know, credit to Miguel Fernandez for playing the character as well as he did.
Mm-hmm. And also his, what is she, a partner or something? Mara, played by Liliana Camarasa. Kamaraska?
Yeah, she was good. She needed more, I think.
Yeah.
Like, which...
She was all right, although...
We'll get into her subplot a little bit more.
Yeah.
But, yeah, she was fine. So, yeah, that's special guest. Well, we have flashbacks.
Ooh, yeah.
It's the price of war. Just war. It's worth it.
Worth it.
And 100 years ago, you'd agreed with me.
Probably! But now I think the noblest thing a man can do is live.
So all the flashbacks we have in this episode take place around the same day or same time period. There's actually 3 short ones sprinkled throughout. And they're all during the Mexican Revolution.
Yep.
And it's Duncan and Paul are fighting for the revolution at the time. So I think overall the flashbacks were okay, but they also, I felt the budget in them again. We've had this conversation before. I thought that for feeling the budget in them, they still looked okay. Because there was a decent number of extras in there.
Oh, yeah.
The costuming didn't look fantastic, but I've seen a lot worse. But it's really where we got most of our story of Paul Karros and kind of developed him. It's where Duncan sort of sees that he, you know, isn't quite, we're led to believe they've known each other for a while. How long, we don't know. We don't know their full history, but they've been together. They've been comrades. Basically, Paul kind of sees Duncan as becoming a pacifist, which will come up as a line again later. And, you know, I think overall it was okay. There was, there's a moment with Duncan and a young nurse, Elda, who we just mentioned, and, where she is sort of questioning what's going on. But then later on, they pay that off with her being, you know, all viva la revolucion, and kind of being willing to die for freedom. Is sort of the theme that's going on here. I did like the, even though it was definitely forced exposition, I did like the mention of Spartacus and how Karros is like, you were never a slave. I was a slave in the Rome for, to the Romans, and I was made to be a gladiator and blah, blah, blah. Like, totally. And I, what I liked was him talking about that and mentioning Spartacus. Like, have I ever told you about him? Duncan's like, a time or two. So it's almost like the show making fun of the fact that, look, we got to squeeze some exposition in here somehow and get some story about this guy. So let's just have Duncan be like, yeah, I know you've told me this a bunch.
Yeah. You won't shut up about Spartacus, dude. We get it.
Which, you know, which, I mean, I wouldn't either. I'll be honest. If I had rode with Spartacus in battle, I'd be telling everybody that would listen about that.
Yeah. So, and that's what makes me think, just in the way they interact with this, I feel like they've only known each other as far as this time period. For whatever reason, Duncan, as he always does, shows himself to be a formidable soldier type person, regardless of how he feels about it. So I'm willing to bet they met around here. Duncan shows him what kind of guy he is. But at this point, this is where Duncan's like, this is ridiculous. Like, people are ridiculous. Like, we should be, you know, fighting for lives and not for causes. And he's like, I'm fighting for the fight.
Yeah, well, this, so the flashbacks here kind of dovetail off of last week's flashbacks well because of that. Because last week it was all Duncan with the Lakota. And so it takes place after these flashbacks. And so in some ways, watching these in sequence, now we see sort of, because I kind of almost put this as like very close to just before he kind of gave up on everything and disappeared, you know, got himself out of the game, got himself out of fighting.
Probably.
Did become a bit of a pacifist, at least for a while.
Well, he could.
And so that was fine. I did like how, you know, they set up and they establish sort of Duncan and Paul as respecting each other, but there's already at the beginning, Duncan's like, look, we really need to not be fighting this anymore. This isn't our fight type of thing. And it just kept progressively going more and more. And you see Karros just not able to stop and not able to mm-hmm. not fight.
Right.
You know, down to the point where he's executing soldiers just because that's what they would have done to us if they had won.
Right.
And that kind of stuff.
One other really interesting thing I noticed in the second flashback when they're fighting these soldiers, I noticed how Duncan was specifically trying to knock them out. Mm-hmm. Not kill them, knock them out. Where Karos is over there just trying to kill them outright, not caring, whatever. And I thought that was interesting in telling the story, not only through their words, but also through their actions and how they deal with it. And like that little interesting thing, I was like, okay, somebody's really looking at the script and thinking about that. Like, which, you know, almost could have been Adrian Paul, I bet. Being like, okay, the way Duncan's acting at this point, I probably dab these guys. I should probably knock them out. And the director's like, okay.
Yeah, that I works. Mean, I would buy that's Adrian Paul knowing the character enough. And you're right, mm-hmm. that is a subtle thing that you might not think about while you're watching it, but if you watch the episode and then you're sort of reflecting back on it, you would realize that. So,
right.
I definitely like that. Overall, I mean, they're fine flashbacks. We've seen better, but I've seen mm-hmm. a lot worse. It never felt out of place. It felt like the time period they were trying to emulate, and it felt, you know, the costuming was fine, the look of mm-hmm. the little village that they, you know, it did show the budget a little bit, but that's fine. I don't mind that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And they hid that with the sepia tone, you know. Oh, yeah. So
you can always get away with a lot with the sepia tone filter.
Mm-hmm.
Cloud, you know, maybe you've changed more than I thought. It's not like you'd leave a friend standing with an empty glass.
You with an empty glass. This is exactly like the old days.
Well, we had no Richie and no Joe this week.
Nope.
But we do get to center on Charlie. And honestly, with what they were doing, I wanted more of it. Because it feels, it's an interesting and cool story thread to have Charlie want to be part of something more than himself, do something mm-hmm. good in the world, give back to someone else, kind of do something selfless. But it also feels like it was very rushed.
Yeah, this feels like they did the very bare minimum of setting up Charlie to make his decision at the end of the episode. Mm-hmm. Like, bare minimum. Him talking about this at the beginning, him doing whatever it was you call that, trying to talk to Mara.
Flirting, and, you know, question mark?
Flirting, maybe. which, at the beginning, the way she reacted, I was like, there's... Is she leading him on for some reason or something? Like, I wasn't sure what her interests were. But just, yeah, like, they could have done more with Charlie talking about the way he feels about this, the way, for whatever reason, there needed to be something more than just this is a cool cause. There needed to be something that mm-hmm. really pulled Charlie into it because of how much we know Charlie is now. Like, we know he's a good guy. We know he's going to stand up for people. But it felt weird that all of a sudden he's like, this is the cause I need to go help right now. And it's like, why?
Yeah,
like,
and it's enough for him to just pull stakes and leave. Like, just straight up,
right.
Hey, I'm out. And and that's fine if you're writing the character off, but give us some setup leading up to this. And again, this is something we've talked about a lot. This was a syndicated TV show, so there isn't a lot of underlying plot threads that flow episode to episode,
right?
Like you would get in a more modern series. And I think in a more modern series, you would set this up by talking about this conflict that's going on in the Balkans and talking about what's happening, plant the seeds earlier so that when Charlie meets this person, we now know that he is searching for something more in his life. We've had... Because I think it's very admirable for him to want to do that. We've had no indication that that is something that he has been yearning for enough to make him leave his home until now. So,
right.
You know, yeah, I agree with you on that.
I think you could have taken some of the time away from Paul explaining how much of a dude who just wants to keep fighting wars.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
Because they did that over and over again. I think you could have taken away some of his story and given enough to Charlie to make something. Like, it doesn't even have to be something we know about before this episode. It could just be one random thing, like, that's just, you know, an image on the television, something he sees in the paper that just reminds him of the times he spent fighting before, and it just, it triggers him in a way, and it's just like, okay, that's it. I'm done sitting on the sidelines for this one.
Yeah, that's a more, like, the Charlie angle and that story is a more emotionally meaty story than Paul Karros and Duncan. You can still have the conflict between the two of them, but maybe just make it, you have one, or take two of the flashbacks, combine them, and make it a slightly longer flashback, but that's enough to establish what's going on there, but really focus on Mara and Charlie and make their connection mean something more, so that there is a, because it's a bummer to say goodbye to Charlie at the end of this episode. You and I both like Charlie a lot, and we like the dynamic of Charlie with Duncan, because it's a good, it's this really good, like, real feeling friendship between these two guys and this mutual respect. Yeah. And I don't want to say goodbye to him, but he's leaving. And he's leaving kind of out of nowhere, and we don't have a huge emotional reason for that. So it does feel like they just sort of were like, well, I guess we're done with Charlie now. Okay, Charlie is gone. Like, that bums me out.
It could have been done a lot better.
It could have. And, you know, to not have Richie there, to not have Joe there, who both know Charlie on the episode that sends him off, is kind of a bummer as well. So... yeah, they could have, I would have restructured this story around a little bit and focused it more on Charlie and less on Paul Karros. Which also then would make the character of Paul Karros being somewhat bland and kind of a retread not as big an issue with this episode. It would have made, I think, the episode better, because now it's, we're ticking the box to have the evil immortal and somebody that Duncan can fight at the end, but we're really focused on Charlie. And all that. So, you know, it is what it is, but it's a bummer to say, it's a bummer to say bye to Charlie, but I do like a character getting to leave on their own terms too.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is,
especially that line he has at the end, that this time he's the one leaving with the girl.
Yeah. That's great.
It's like, nice.
That's a Charlie and Duncan moment, right? Cause you know, 100% that's what Charlie would say to him at that point.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I was fine with that. Again, it's good work out of Charlie, too. I mean, Phil Aiken's good in the episode. I just wanted to give him more. He deserved more than that.
It's their revolution.
No, it's my revolution.
We have a final fight. It's another one in broad daylight. And it's at the docks. At the one spot where they apparently had sets for the docks, because it's the same location that we saw earlier in the episode with Paul and the assassin guy, whose name escapes me.
Right. The assassin guy was Dorchev.
Dorchev, that's right. So it's the same location. The fight itself, fine. I had no problems with it, other than the obvious stunt double shots. Yeah. You could tell that it was a stunt double because the hair was completely different. Miguel Fernandez has thinning hair, and his stunt double did not. But but overall, it's fine. I did enjoy, from a storytelling standpoint, in terms of a fight, I liked how Paul is confident when they start the fight, to a fault, because he still views Duncan as a pacifist. He's still seeing him as the guy that walked away during the Mexican Revolution.
And the one who's trying to talk him out of fighting all this time throughout the episode, he thinks Duncan is just going to lay down.
Yep. And
little does he know.
Yeah, look, just because Duncan doesn't want to fight doesn't mean he doesn't know how to fight, okay?
Extremely well.
So, but, and the other thing I noticed with the fight was the quickening afterwards. All the budget from last week's quickening, the weird floaty thing quickening, they put in this one because, man, there was they had the pyro budget for this guy.
My note for this was exploding them munitions.
Now, because they set that up earlier in the episode, I actually appreciate that was how the quickening went this time, because we were told, even if you forget about it, you were told earlier in the episode that that shipping container is full of munitions.
Uh-huh.
So once it explodes, and hey, it looked pretty cool. So, you know, not a bad fight. I did like, too, that that Paul is still rocking a Roman-style sword.
Yep.
It's a nice looking. We've actually had decent looking weapons this season, because season two it felt like, weapons wise for the different immortals, season two felt kind of bland, especially compared to season one. So we're seeing some good ones. The katana that Stephen McHattie's character had in the first episode was pretty cool. Plus, we got the introduction of where the dragon head's katana came from.
Right.
And what's his name? Kern's Bowie knife and sword from last week was a cavalry sword. That was a cool combination. And now we've got, you know, a cool looking Roman sword from a Roman gladiator. So I like that.
Yeah. It's funny. I was thinking about it too. It's like, until the movie Gladiator, Roman swords were kind of all over the place. After the movie Gladiator, if you say Roman sword, it's that specific type of gladius you're going to see more often than not. It's funny how just a movie like that that's so popular just sets everybody on, this is a gladiator sword, this is a Roman sword, period. And it's just like, yeah, there was more than just that one, guys.
Right, there were a lot of different styles. We did see a different styled one, I think, from the one Roman from the Nefertiti episode. Which was kind of cool. But again, that was a character that never went anywhere. This one we actually got to see in action. So that was kind of cool. I think overall the episode's fine, but it's...
Oh, and Duncan said the thing. We don't get it that much in the series, but he said the thing.
Oh, he did. You're right. And for good reason too.
Like, yeah.
with Paul being like, what are you going to do? And there's, you know, there can be only one. Boom, take his head. Like... Yeah. I think it's been a season and a half. I mean, we didn't get much of There Can Be Only One in season two at all.
No.
And even
they
the second
don't
half
say
of
say it much throughout the series.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this episode is fine. It's just not, it's not great.
Yeah.
It's not, it's like, it to me it felt like a bit of a filler episode. This was a and more so, I think, as we've already talked about, because it came off the heels of two episodes that had really good special guests and really good things to remember. And then you get this one and it sort of just falls flat. It's not bad, but it's not great either. And it's not memorable. You know, I didn't remember much of it at all. And a lot of what I thought I remembered from it, I conflated with Warmonger.
Okay. Yeah. So that makes sense.
You know, that's really what it came back to was Miguel Fernandez not having quite the same gravitas and the story just being focused on the wrong parts. It really, because of what was going on with Charlie, that needed to be more of the focus, because we have, as an audience, we have more of an emotional investment in him than we do in some random guy with little tie to Duncan. That isn't like, if it was all about Karos and they weren't doing anything with Charlie, that's different. You can go in that direction, but don't give us this little bit of Charlie and then not enough of it. And now he's gone.
Right. Yeah. And like we said before, this is 90s syndicated television when they're having to write 22, 24 episodes of a season. There's going to be quote unquote filler.
Yep. Yeah.
A filler episode, but it's still a dang good Highlander episode. Compared to some of the stuff we've seen past.
Sure. Like, I would say, honestly, my biggest leap of logic in this episode, thing that kind of bugged me, because, again, we're talking about a fantasy series about immortal beings that can only die with their heads getting cut off. There's going to be suspension of disbelief.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that this international incident and arms embargo and peace treaty talks were happening in Seacover, Washington, makes no sense whatsoever. There is no reason for any of that stuff to be happening where Duncan is, except that they wanted it to happen where Duncan lives.
Yeah. that's one of those things where you could probably write it off that the specific senator that he keeps talking about that he's talking to or something is specifically there and just has the beef, but they never go there at all.
Right. If there had been a mention of that, okay, I get it. Like, yeah, our senator is sitting on the committee that talks about this thing. Something. Mm-hmm. Give us a few lines of that and it's fine. But without that, it just feels like there's no reason for this stuff to be happening where it is, because Seacover is supposed to be Seattle area. Like,
right.
And we're talking about stuff that's happening in the Balkans in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So it just didn't make any sense. But, you know, again, that's a little bit of nitpicking on my part. So, no, it's fine. Now next week we've got an episode, The Cross of Saint Antoine in I don't know how to pronounce that one. But I do know that Joe is back, and we've got we're going to have some good stuff to talk about with this one. This is a much better episode. We're ticking back up with this. So you're going to want to come back and you're going to want to check that one out. If you like this show, we do record weekly at twitch.tv/TVsTravis Tuesday nights around 9 p.m. Eastern time. So you can come hang out, like Cyrenix joined us this week. Ace, Daniora. Mm-hmm. I even see a Monkey Bananas in there hanging out in the chat, chatting with us as we record live. And then the show comes out on Thursdays, anchor.fm/Let's Watch Highlander, available anywhere you get podcasts. So you can just search for Let's Watch Highlander and look for Audie's amazing episode art. He's now doing new episode art per episode, which is fantastic. This week's was another good one.
Yeah, it's been fun.
We love your feedback. We love hearing from everybody. You can find me on Twitter at TV's Travis, and Audie, you are
Oddly Normal One, and the one spelled out.
All right. And that is where you can also see all the artwork that you do that isn't show related either, because you do fantastic art. I love the comic thing that you did with the Makin' Bacon.
Yeah,
that was great.
That was a fun little commission.
That's so cool. Next week is The Cross of Saint Antoine. In I'm gonna go with Antoine until I hear otherwise. I'll watch the episode again and probably have it and then forget by next Tuesday. So doesn't really matter. That's gonna be happening next week. And remember that there can be only one filler episode this week.
Hopefully.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.